The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thank you once again for joining us. This is God Calling. And joining us today is Father David Verbsky. He is currently at St. Francis. Father, welcome to God Calling.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Father, tell me, where did you grow up?
So I'm originally from Mentor, Ohio. So for those of listeners who are a little more centrally located, that's on the eastern edge of the diocese, up by the lake. And I also have kind of a close affinity to St. Mary's Parish in Chardon, which ended up becoming my home parish as I helped out with the Life Team program there.
Okay.
So kind of on that east side in general.
Yeah. Did you go to Catholic school coming up?
Actually, I did not. So I think one of the reasons why I had to come here today is that I was raised Methodist.
Okay.
And so I went to the Mentor public schools all through, K through 12. And then I went to Bowling Green State University and got a degree in business.
Oh, all right. Where did you start to get an inkling?
Well, it was actually during that time when I was working, I ended up having a long-term dating relationship with someone who was not Christian. And it kind of forced me to think about the whole question, why Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
And not specifically why Jesus is Lord, not, Jesus is a nice man or Jesus is a good teacher. And so it forced me to really think about that question for myself and to decide, is this important? Because if it wasn't, that relationship might have worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But if it were, then it seemed like we were kind of headed for, rough seas ahead with just some pretty intense disagreement.
Mm-hmm. It always kept coming to the top, the call.
That's correct. And so it's probably the first time I ever actually really prayed and said, okay, God, like, what should I do with this? And it left me with a lot of free time, when I newly out of a relationship and just desiring to know more about my faith. And I ended up stumbling across some pretty violently anti-Catholic materials, different fundamentalist cartoons and things that are out there. And the beauty of it was it made me want to see what Catholics had to say in reply.
Oh, okay, sure. Challenged you.
That's correct. So I went on Google Catholic reply, I think it's called Chick Tracks, and it took me to this big thing on Catholic Answers, Catholic.com. And it was one of those things where it was very much, without even realizing, I had a desire for truth. I think as a gift of wanting to desire truth and not expecting to find it in the Catholic faith, but recognizing it, when you see it, or being, compelled by what I was encountering. I remember calling a friend of mine and just basically saying, hey, I think I may need to become Catholic. I've been reading, listening to Catholic radio, listening to especially a lot of the Catholic Answers for non-Catholics. And she says, David, have you ever been to the Mass? I said, no. And she's like, well, why don't we start there?
Mm-hmm. Something that hits me is the call to serve Christ. Why not to the Methodist church that you were brought up in? Why this way?
That's a good question. I think in this case, because the call to just a deeper personal faith came first. And so when I was going through that process of figuring out where I thought I should be, where the Lord wanted me to be, ministry wasn't even on my radar as far as serving as an ordained minister.
Mm-hmm.
I was more just about, okay, where do I need to be personally? And so even all through RCA, when I went through RCA as an adult, because I was already baptized, I didn't really understand vocation. I thought a vocation is something you just kind of innately wanted to do. And really, I didn't really want ever to be a minister, growing up. This wasn't something that I thought about. I didn't think negatively about it. I just didn't really think about it at all. if that makes sense. And of course, I knew Catholic priests were celibate. I was always very much interested, you know, in being married, and so that just wasn't on the radar at that moment.
We communicate in so many different ways in social media and all that. A lot of it's very negative. Mm-hmm. But did the Catholic presence online and some of those materials you read, was that helpful? Or are we doing a good job as a church?
You know, I think at least the resources that I encounter, like those Catholic.com and a lot of the radio programs that are available both live as well as recorded, were very helpful because they're very charitable, at least the ones that I encountered. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when they were dealing with people who are not Catholic and they were answering questions, they were answering them honestly and faithfully, but very patiently and gently. And I think that's compelling, especially because for most of us, myself included, it was very much a two steps forward, one step back, where you're starting to encounter kind of hard things. Mm-hmm. And so you're okay, like, well, how do I feel about this? What should I feel about this? And so I think that the most of what I was encountering gave me permission to kind of encounter that and to keep looking without feeling like it was a take it or leave it, you know, in that moment. It is a take it or leave it, but it's a take it or leave it as a whole relationship, right? Not just if you don't understand on day one, there's the door, right?
The RCIA process, where were you baptized? While you were baptized?
Yes, I was baptized as an infant at Mount Union Methodist, and so I actually went through the RCA program at St. Gabriel in Mentor, Ohio. And so I think for me, the biggest thing about that was I was pretty much already sold on becoming Catholic when I first showed up day one, but it helped me grow as, you know, being part of a community. So less of the just me and Jesus, you know, and more of the me as part of a, you know, as a parish community.
A group of believers.
Exactly.
That sort of community feeds on itself.
It does.
When you see other people, you know, doing that sort of thing. So did you began to just a regular practice of the Mass, or attending Mass and sacraments and such?
Yeah, I think I was a weekly Mass goer probably like the May before I started RCA, so like May of 2012. And then RCA started in the fall of that year. You know, for me, I only got about 4 weeks of just kind of, I'm going to say, being an ordinary Catholic before I got the discernment bug. I was in the confessional, and it was time for my penance. And of course, I'm thinking, you know, the priest is looking at me, and he's looking at me in kind of a different way than I'm used to. And I'm thinking, what have I done? Of course, I knew what I had done. There's nothing particularly special, at least, just, you know, as far as my confessions went. And he knew who I was, like, he knew my story. He just says, David, have you ever considered becoming a Catholic priest? And I, you know, of all the things I could have expected him to say, that was not the one.
Is that my penance?
Well, and funny you should say that, because he did. He said, you know what? I don't ask every Catholic male who wanders in here this question. I really feel like God wants me to ask you, so will you ask once for your penance if this is what God wants you to consider? And I didn't know you could ask for alternate penances. So I reluctantly agreed to do it. And After that one prayer, after that penance, it was a question that just wouldn't go away. And I had a full 2 years to test it. Uh-huh. When you're a new convert, there's a sort of a cooling off period where canon law says you can't enter a religious house of formation, you know, like a monastery, and you cannot enter a seminary.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
okay.
So there's in the church, in her wisdom, has seen fit to just give people time to kind of, you know, breathe and mature in their faith before they take on another level of rigor.
Yeah. Father, stay right there. We're going to be back on God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski with Father David Verbsky from St. Francis. We'll be back. Welcome back. You're joining me, Paul Orlowski, and Father David Verbsky from St. Francis. Father, you were talking about after you became Catholic, about a 2-year kind of cooling off period. But I think where we left it off was that little nag, that gnawing wouldn't go away, the call to a priesthood as suggested by a priest in the confessional. Mm-hmm. During that time period, were you kind of like chomping at the bit? No, I want to do this. I want to do this.
Yeah, I pretty much went to my pastor's office and wanted to solve it that day. You know, the question of should I, shouldn't I? And most of the priests I encountered and a lot of the lay people as well were very helpful, just kind of helping me understand that this isn't something you figure out for most people in a day or even in a week. And connecting me with some good resources. So, you know, connecting me with a spiritual director, someone who could, you know, pray and walk with me in that journey, and helping me, you know, encouraging me again just to kind of embrace some patience. So I very much wanted to figure it out that day, but I didn't even really know what I was trying to figure out, if that makes sense. And I knew of the priesthood, but I didn't know what I was discerning.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't discern what you don't know.
Sure.
And so the seminary, I believe they still do this, actually offered a program called Crossing the Threshold, which is for men typically who are out of college, who are already working, who are considering a vocation. This is a chance to gather together, to have some fellowship, but then to be kind of very intently journeying not only with a spiritual director, but with the actual director of vocation. So there's a relationship there that begins and then that ultimately culminates in either an invitation to apply to the seminary or perhaps a discernment that's not where that man is called.
What were you doing for a living at that time?
So at the time I was I worked in supply chain management. So I did like purchasing, contracts, negotiations. It was a good job. It was a good paying job.
I think you got out right on time though, with the supply chain.
And, the thing is that it was interesting because I kind of had to, have my feet in both worlds. Cause on the one hand, here I am discerning, am I going to go to seminary? On the other hand, I had to recognize there's a good chance that I may not be called. And so I'm trying to, give myself,
mm-hmm.
An appropriate way to my work and just
sure.
to continue to nurture that career. So it was an interesting 2 years of just balancing both. And a lot of time in adoration, And some of that time just going there like, okay, God, I don't know why, I know why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing. Anytime you'd like to kind of give me a little clarity on this whole vocation question, that'd be great.
So what year did you enter the seminary?
I started in the fall of 2015.
Okay. So now you had your bachelor's degree already.
Mm-hmm.
So just some additional coursework and then as well as the upper.
Yeah. So basically seminary. For a man who already comes in with a bachelor's degree, they do what's called pre-theology. In Cleveland, it's 2 years of philosophy. So kind of learning how to think. And then an additional at least 4 years of theology, so learning how to think and to about God, and then of course learning liturgy and all the pastoral skills that a man is asked to take on.
Sometimes people think of the seminary these days as maybe it's these dark hallways with Gregorian chant, and you have to see the seminarians versus priest basketball games, and there's a lot of fellowship.
There is, yeah. I think the key thing in the seminary is balance. So there's. We've used different languages. We've talked about pillars. We've talked about, foundations. But every seminarian needs to have a life of prayer. They need to have an academic life. They need to have a human life. So they need to have those hobbies, that time mm-hmm. of fraternity. And then they need to have what we're going to call a pastoral life. They need to be building skills for ministry. And so there's time built into each day and into each week that kind of helps men grow in each of those areas, and especially shore up maybe ones that are stronger than others, or shore up weaker areas, and mm-hmm. build on those strengths, if that makes sense.
Well, and parish priests are pulled in so many directions, and there are a lot of places no assistant, and so you have a lot to do. So you have to be an organized person for sure,
mm-hmm.
and they teach those skills, is what it really sounds like. Any moments when you thought about it and had to pray harder and ask for guidance from God, or?
Absolutely. Even the first weekend I arrived. We had, I think, two or three men out of my class of like eight pre-theology guys were coming in. They all left in like the first 3 days, which is not really encouraged. That was their choice. They all had different reasons, I'm sure, but it kind of makes you think, well, why them and not me? Or, what do they know mm-hmm. that I don't know, kind of thing? And so mm-hmm. the devil kind of gets in there. And, when you're in the seminary, I think the important thing, just like any vocation or any discernment, is you don't make sudden movements. Ignatius says, in time of desolation, don't make a change. I didn't learn the actual rule that mm-hmm. early in seminary, but it's the same. I knew the principle, and the principle was, again, patience, look for consistent themes in prayer, look for movements that occur over time, as opposed to having a bad day. So a lot of times when a seminary has a bad day or even a bad month, it's an invitation to kind of be patient in prayer and to see what the Lord might be doing with that.
Is there a point in the seminary where you get you feel, I'm in the home stretch. this is the real deal. I'm going to do this.
There's several. The first is when you become a candidate. So this is a church. The church has basically had enough time with you, at least 2 years probably, for an older gentleman to say that this guy at least has what it takes to possibly be a priest. And so mm-hmm. it's a step of the church recognizing that, and it's an extra level of intentionality. So that's one of them. Probably the big one is just when you get like past your internship or your pastoral year where you're spending time in the parish and you're kind of past the halfway point, there is a real sense of like, your coursework and everything that you're doing starts to get very practical. Mm-hmm. And you're practicing like, well, this is how we're going to do liturgy. This is how the sacraments are going to work. And so there is a very real sense of like, wow, like this is, we're way past theory and we're starting to get into actual, you know, the practice, the meat of living a priestly vocation. So
now you were out at St. Brendan's in North Olmsted for your pastoral year, the year before.
So I was there for my transitional diaconate.
Okay.
And then I spent a year at St. Helen Parish in Newberry, Ohio, and that's where I did my pastoral year, which ended up also being COVID year one. So that was an interesting year for all of us. But again, you I think you make the best of it. It's always valuable to have time, you know, with the people. Probably the hardest thing in the seminary sometimes is that you're not discerning being in seminary. You're discerning whether you're called to be a priest, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things about seminary that guys may love or may hate. And those, like they may hate the fact that they kind of have to, you know, live in this more regimented lifestyle. You know, you get an 8x10 room. At least the old rooms were pretty small. The new ones are pretty nice. Praise God. Thank you, people of Cleveland. Or they may love the camaraderie, and some of that camaraderie is a lot harder after, you know, after ordination. So there are things that, goods and bads, that are part of the seminary life, but the bishop, in this case Bishop Prez, would often remember men like, you know, you're here to learn and be formed, but you're also here to be sent out, that this is not your final place.
Stay right there. We'll be back with more on God Calling. Father David Burski joining us. This is God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Welcome back. I'm Paul Orlowski with Father David Verbsky from St. Francis. Father, I probably misspoke a little before. Your transitional diaconate year, that's when you've been made a deacon. That was the stuff that was at St. Brendan's. And then prior to that was the intern year, if you call it that.
That's correct.
A better name. Okay. How different are those 2 years? Because I think people's, I don't know if it's attitude, but they're more respectful maybe when the collar's on.
It definitely changes how people relate to you. Okay. I think the biggest thing when you're an intern is you haven't yet made a public and permanent commitment to them. So you're committed, you're in seminary, you're there, you're serving them. But there's something different about once you've, you know, again, literally laid out in the marble, promised. So you make your promises as a deacon. You promise celibacy. You promise to pray the liturgy of the hours, you know, with and for the people, and you promise obedience. So I think, you know, once I noticed, you know, being in the parish as deacon, I think people, you know, respond to that in a different way because they recognize, okay, here's someone who has publicly made a commitment to be here for me in a very different way, if that makes sense.
No, it does. How empowering is that to see that people are, they believe in you? They've got to give you a lift, some energy maybe.
Yeah, and it's also very humbling because, you know, you quickly realize that, you know, just because you've, again, taken on that office, you certainly don't have all the answers. You encounter people frequently who at least appear to be much holier, you know, than you are. And so it's very good. And it's really kind of weird when you're a transitional deacon because you're like an already there, but then not yet. Sometimes people will see you out and they'll be like, oh, hey, Father. And you're sometimes you can't correct them. Sometimes you're not on the point. But there's a sense of, you know, that they know you belong to them, but then like there's also a little bit that you can't quite offer. You're like, you know, hey, can you hear my confession? And the joke is, so I can hear it, but I can't give you absolution and I can't promise secrecy. You know, so it's just, it's a kind of an in-between space, but it's a necessary space. Again, the church has seen fit to have this time where you are already living out some of that public ministry. Of course, you're serving at the altar, you're preaching and reading the gospel, but you have not yet taken on all the duties that are proper to the priesthood.
You use an interesting term there, that people know that you belong to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful way to put it. Well-chosen words, I believe. Where'd you get your first assignment? Where'd your first assignment as a priest?
So I am at St. Francis de Sales in Portage Lakes. And I've been there since June 14th. So, you know, just in those first days. But it's something I'd grown up hearing a lot about, you know, from other seminarians. There's a lot of, you know, vocations who have come from our parish. But I'm you know, a north sider. I'm an east side, a north sider. I didn't have a lot of experience of Akron. So it's also just been an experience of just learning a different corner of the diocese. And so one of the beautiful things about, of course, being a diocesan priest is that you are not typically expecting to be sent to the opposite end of the earth, but you do promise to serve, you know, the people anywhere within those boundaries, and they're pretty big. So it's
a big diocese.
Yeah, and so it's a chance to just to go and, you know, offer yourself anew in an area that you may not be familiar with.
Mm-hmm. We broadcast the ordination here on the radio, and Father Doug Brown and myself, and I really was very moved by Bishop Malesic's words to you guys. Anything specific out of that, or the day's probably a blur, I'm kind of guessing. But
oh, boy. You know, I think one of the things that's always has stuck with me about Bishop Malesic, and it's a good inspiration for me as a priest, is just how fatherly he is. So when you listen to him and you listen to his style, it's very clear that he is speaking from a place of humility, mm-hmm. that he's speaking, you know, he'll joke about the fact that he thought at one point he'd work in a lab and not have to deal with people. And he takes that role very seriously. In fact, the first time I met with him, I accidentally called him father by mistake when I was leaving. It's just kind of a habit, right? And he's got the collar on, and he's like, don't apologize. He's like, I want to be, yes, I'm your bishop, but I also want to be known in that role. And so I think it's a good reminder for me just again that father is less of a title that, you know, is, you know, just like a given, and more of something that you need to aspire to live up to, mm-hmm. And to really have people feel that fatherly care for them, and not just, oh, I know I'm supposed to call you father because, you know, yeah. sister said so in third grade, you know. Yeah. So
my sense in the bishop that he doesn't mince words,
right.
but he has a way of saying them that's warming, welcoming, instructional, maybe,
mm-hmm.
And that's a gift, and I'm glad he's sharing it with the Diocese of Cleveland. So the first what? 3 months?
Yeah.
How's it been?
You know, it's very interesting because there's the priesthood is, there's a mix of, like, you know, quiet times, contemplative times, kind of preparing, and then kind of frantic action. And so there's like one day where, you know, I had a communion call in a locked ward at the hospital, and then I needed to go anoint someone, and then I needed to be somewhere else. And then there are those days where, you know, you're just kind of, you know, you pray your office, you've got time to prepare homilies, do different things. Probably the most awesome responsibility that you really can't prepare for until you're in it. Certainly celebrating the Mass, but especially hearing confessions. Again, it's a beautiful responsibility, but it's a very humbling responsibility because, you know, you're aware that you're walking on privileged ground there. And of course,
sure.
I'm finding it's also really motivating me to kind of go deeper in my prayer life because, of course, everything you encounter there is privileged by the seal. And so if you encounter really heavy things, which often you do, you could either kind of turn it on yourself and just be like, oh my gosh, like, or you just bring it to the Lord. And so one of my priest friends said right after he does confession, if he can, he always goes to adoration. I haven't been able to do that always yet, but I think that's a real beautiful idea, just that, you know, as soon as you're done being this vehicle of Christ's mercy, that you then go and bring everything that you've encountered to the Lord, and then ask the Lord to kind of, again, mm-hmm. sort out, you know, untie those knots.
Has mm-hmm. anybody come up to you yet? You know, you could probably relate to the younger people more so than maybe an elderly priest. Has anybody come up and said, Father, my mother says I should be a priest, or I've thought about being a priest, or anything like that? Has that ever happened yet?
You know, not yet, but I you know, you notice certain people in the parish, and, you know, just how people serve and how people interact. So there's a few that I may be reaching out to in the near future. So as I continue to get plugged into the life of the parish. So,
well, you haven't stopped smiling since you got here, so I think you did. You made the right choice. Father, congratulations on your ordination, obviously, and thank you for joining us here on God Calling. Father David Verbsky, you can see him at St. Francis de Sales, and that is down in
Portage Lakes.
It's a beautiful area.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so learning about the diocese.
Yes.
Father, thanks for joining us, and folks at home, thank you for joining us on God Calling right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God Calling.
Thank you for listening to God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock. This locally produced program is dedicated to looking closer at religious vocations, from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. If you miss any part of today's program, or you just want to listen again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at AM1260TheRock.com.